You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Dancin' Man, a Fabulous Invalid podcast featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes interviews with the cast and creative team of Bob Fosse's Dancin' on Broadway. I'm Rob Russo.
I'm Jamie Dumont.
And we're your hosts.
We're also excited to be co-producers of Dancin' on Broadway and thrilled to be back in the Rosevale Cocktail Room's Blue Room at Civilian for another conversation with a member of the cast.
Yes, yes. It's a fabulous room.
It is a fabulous room.
Everyone should come to Civilian and check it out.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, joining us this week is Tony DeLelio, who is making his Broadway debut with Dancin'. Tony has been working nonstop since he graduated from high school, appearing in national tours from Beauty and the Beast to Matilda, Kinky Boots, Cats, most recently Hamilton, and off-Broadway in the St. No Disco.
We spoke to Tony on the eve of his Broadway debut with a first preview of Dancin', and here's our conversation. Tony, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You are in the final days of tech at the Music Box Theater and just a few days away from your official Broadway debut. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling alive and grateful and honestly exhausted in like the most satisfying way. I think that's a good sign of a solid tech process. We're working really hard over there to make sure we make something good. So I'm exhausted.
Are you moving along quickly through tech?
We are. I mean, sometimes we're like, well, we flew through Sing 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 just because we know what that number is. Mm. It was crazy just to run that. But then, you know, you spend forever on 1 minute of the show.
So what's the most challenging part of tech so far?
The costume changes. Because we're playing real people and it's this mega mix of Bob's work. So we're having to put on a different like pant, shirt, jewelry, all these pieces. So right now we're trying to figure out the traffic of that. It's a little, we kind of realized it feels chaotic to exit the stage as one character, get all the accoutrement together and then focus yourself to enter someone completely different. That's what we're trying to fine tune right now, which is that's fun. Like we can do that, you know?
Yeah.
Cause we know the steps and we know the direction of it. It's just, we gotta get the pants on.
Literally.
I need my shirt.
Suddenly becomes a very different show without
yes.
those pants, right?
Yeah. Yeah. In tech, I fully went out there without pants and it was a good laugh.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Well, you've had also a very eventful tech experience. Mm-hmm. You had a recent hospitalization with blood clots. I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about what happened and how you're doing.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Mm. It has completely reshaped my mindset with this. Mm. I think before I knew what was going on with my health, I was letting, you know, like insecurities or doubt or getting stressed over making like the most perfect show ever. And then this thing happened where I fell. Mm. I slipped when we were rehearsing Beat Me Daddy and my right arm just started to swell almost twice the size as my left. And that sent me to the doctor. And after seeing like three different specialists, they found a blood clot located under my right collarbone, which they believed happened when I was doing Hamilton right before this. I flipped the gun in Yorktown. And instead of going into my hand, it rotated into the back of my head, which really hurt. And that's what sends blood clots through the body is like massive trauma to the head. So they were able to get it out at the hospital. Everyone was so confused why I was there. They're like, were you in a car accident? I'm like, no, I'm a dancer. I do musical theater. So it's like adjacent to a car accident.
It's a contact sport, you know?
Yeah, it is. It is. But the producing team at Dancin', Joey Parnes' office was so sweet and set me up with the best doctors and they're able to get it out. And this happened at the end of the studio process going into tech, which sounds stressful. However, it was kind of the perfect time because our bodies were allowed to rest as we were focused on, you know, the lights, camera, action of it all. It wasn't so much about the dancing. Mm. So I was able to take that time to go to the hospital. They got the blood clot out, thank God. And now I can feel my blood flowing again and I can, I'm back to dancing.
And it sounds like it was a blessing in disguise because you wouldn't have known about the blood clot necessarily unless you had had the injury in rehearsal. So better to find it out when you could deal with it in a sort of relaxed fashion versus first preview, opening night, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. And I was talking with Wayne about it because Wayne and I are very similar in that our energy is very combustible and like just something happens when the music plays. And I, especially when I was younger, I had a habit of just like blowing my load, so to speak, way too fast, way too soon. And so with this, after the surgery, I know my heart, like speaking of the organ, not just my feelings, my heart in such a new intimate way that when I'm dancing, when I'm breathing the inhale, the exhale, when I'm using my muscles, it's so, there's so much more care and attention in a way that I feel like my body has aged 10 years in maturity. So it's like, yes, it's helping create something artistically interesting, but just the experience now of me working through the show is there's so many more peaks and valleys, literally to protect my heart and make sure that my blood flow stays healthy, you know, while I'm still on this medication and I'm still getting back.
Are you noticing a change in your dancing?
Absolutely. Because I think before when it would be, it would feel like choices of like, oh, I'm going to choose to hit this part really hard, or I'm going to choose to kind of hold my breath here to make it a little more daring or exciting. I don't really have that privilege, you know? So my dancing is, and how I'm dancing has to be in support of my health. You know, I think with my young, able body pre-blood clot, like the blood flow, it was almost like this endorphin high that I was addicted to that I could manipulate and play with and come off out of breath and let my body, you know, catch up and get back to it. But now if I'm not conscious of the inhale, if I'm not conscious of, you know, I'm hitting this hip, but like I really have to isolate that one part of my body so that my lungs and respiratory system stay even keeled. You know, it's so much more thoughtful to protect this because yes, they got the blood clot out. I'm still on blood thinners to make sure everything's good. So it's my doctor described to me, he was like, you have the insides of like an 85-year-old man right now, even though you have the strength of a 29-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that like contradiction. It's so in alignment with Bob's work and like the two things working against each other, which I'm sure you've heard his vets speak on your podcast a lot.
Oh yeah,
it's like the two things working in opposition really creates something interesting. And in my case, it's creating something healthy.
It speaks exactly to what Bob looked for in a dancer, which is the individual person, right? Mm. The character within the human being, the dancer, their personality, right? Their technique, of course, but it was really more about who that person was.
Yeah.
And now it sounds like you're becoming a different person through this whole process and through your injury, which sounds, it's funny to say an injury has been a blessing or been a good thing, but it sounds like it has been.
It has. I mean, I had to make it into something of use and I didn't want to sit in this, like, I am a victim of what happened to me. It's like, no, I'm surviving my given circumstances. And this is my Broadway debut and something I have worked so hard to be here. And like, I'm not going to let something at the 11th hour, like, deter me. The city has given me far more challenges.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
Well, you've been working, I mean, very, very consistently since high school, right? I mean, you joined a national tour and you just hit the ground running. And so I'm wondering, you know, now that you've had like a decade of performance experience, professional performance experience under your belt, what does it mean to you to be making your Broadway debut in this show in this moment in your career?
This kind of feels like my cotillion. I feel like over the last decade, touring so much, every one of those tours just kind of came at the perfect time, you know, and one thing led to the next. They're all such different shows that ask such different parts of me. Mm. Like Cats is one thing, Kinky Boots being a drag queen up in the heels, you know, to go from being 6 inches off the ground to crawling on the ground. It's just, it's very different things that I feel like all are informing how I'm doing this show. Because this show is such a melting pot of different styles. I felt like I went to college for 10 years and now I get to have fun with my degree. Even though I didn't go to college, you know, it's like the college.
The road was your college.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Probably more useful than many four-year programs, but
that's true.
A different podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm wondering, what was the audition process like for Danson?
For Danson? Yeah. Well, my teacher, Jen Waldman, who, is a boss. I love her. She sent a breakdown to me. I was still in Virginia because during the pandemic, I couldn't afford to continue living here. So I was in Virginia working as a barista at a coffee shop in a hospital. And she sent me the breakdown for this. And she was like, you have to go in. And so I reached out to my agent and I'm like, Jen Waldman said I should. And then when I got, I ended up getting an appointment, which was really nice. And then once I got there and I was reminded that the team is Wayne and Corinne McFadden Herrera, who I saw right before the shutdown at a Wicked audition. And Corinne and I vibed so hard at that Wicked audition. And then the shutdown happened. I don't know what happened from there. But walking into the audition felt like seeing like an old friend. And Corinne was like, hey, Tony, good to see you again. So I don't know. The vibes were there. I felt like I didn't have to prove anything. I was able to just have fun with them and dance, you know? So after that first dance call, then were the singing callbacks. And after I sang, I started to apologize for not finishing the song because it was a weird cut. And Wayne's like, we didn't need that. And he goes, so what are you doing? What are you up to right now? I'm like, well, I'm a barista in Virginia. And I just got a job working at the Q as a go-go dancer. And he's like, what's the Q? I'm like, it's the hottest new club in town over on 8th Avenue. And he's just, Wayne knows what a go-go dancer is, but he was just kind of being really awkward about it. And so then we had this like volley back and forth of me explaining to him what a go-go dancer is. And I finally went, I dance for dollars, Wayne. And he goes, well, we're going to change that. And I was like, okay, but still like, I didn't feel like anything was promised. It just felt like they were rooting for me from the beginning. And then we had more callbacks and that final callback day, which most of the cast was at, I was like, this room is on fire. And like, whoever ends up in this company, this is gonna be some of the best dancers New York has seen. You know, like there was a group of Maddie Love, Carly, Sky Maddox, Ashley Fitzgerald, like, just some of like the most fantastic dancers.
We're all dancing for dollars in one way or another.
Okay, I'm still dancing for dollars. Yep. The dollars are a little different than the queue.
They just come to you in a different fashion.
Yeah.
So your bio features a bit of a mission statement. You describe yourself as a queer artist who believes that the dance floor is for everyone. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I'm queer in that I use he, him pronouns. I'm a queer man. I've never adhered to a box, whether that's in my personal life, whether that's in the industry, and it has always served me really well. When I first moved here, I was like, I'm going to be in the Book of Mormon with a tie and the dress pants. And like that's not my tea, you know, like that's not me. But I guess in regards to the dance floor being for everyone, it's kind of my belief that everyone can dance. It's like, what happens to you when your favorite team wins, like gets a touchdown or wins the game? Like you jump in the air and do a little victory dance, or if you have to go to the bathroom, you know what I mean? Or what happens when you have a glass of wine at the wedding? Like all of us have this energy inside us that's longing to move. And I don't like hearing things in the industry that are like, oh, I'm not a dancer, or are you a kick your face kind of dancer? It's like, well, I'm a feel my feelings kind of dancer and move to the rhythm kind of dancer. I don't know. People just put themselves in these boxes of what they can and can't do, but we can all dance. You can look silly, you know, you're still dancing. And I hope that's what our show does. And that's why I wanted to put that in my bio, is I want people to feel like inspired to get on the dance floor, or even if it's they go home after the show and put some music on and just like vibrate their body.
Well, speaking of that energy from within, taking a step back, I'm wondering if you could share with us a little bit about your childhood and when you started dancing. What made you start dancing?
My mother, Beth Gillespie, who will be listening to this. I started dancing because it's just what I knew to do. At the root of it, music would play and there's just no other option but to move. I remember my mom, who was in musical theater and worked in DC before she became a mother. She was doing her makeup one day and taught me a ball change. It's called a ball change because you put the weight in the ball of your foot and you change your weight. And that was the first thing that I learned. Oh, there's a language to communicate what I'm doing. What else is there? Oh, there's counts. There's measures of music and you can divide that into counts of 8 or 12, So she introduced me to the language of dance. And then she taught me how to do this swing dance. And then at a wedding when I was 5 or 6, she was it's time, let's hit the floor. So we get out there and we're going into the little jitterbug and people started to freak out. And I think that was the moment where I was okay, I could get into this. Yeah. We can rehearse, present it. Make some people feel something, and go home.
You referenced this a moment ago that you've done several tours. I think 5 is the number.
Pretty nuts.
Do you have a favorite tour, a favorite track, favorite tour stop?
Favorite tour stop? I cried leaving San Francisco. I've been there a couple times. The first time I went, I was 19, 20. So it's you leave your small town. You're wow, the world's so big and beautiful and loves gay people. But San Francisco, the Mission and the Castro, it was just so colorful. And everyone there was so warm. And I just befriended so many drag queens. And that was my first time being around drag culture, which is now such a huge part of my life.
I came out in the Castro when I was in my early 20s.
Oh, my God.
So I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's beautiful.
It's a great city.
But I think favorite show and role was doing Mungo Jerry and Cats. Mm. Because rewind the clock back to 5-year-old me, watching that 1998 VHS was my intro. This is dancing. it was, they were using technique like ballet, but they were wild and vicious and it was hard as fuck, but satisfying. At the end of the show, you're damn, we just did something.
You're talking to two big Cats
fans.
Yeah,
very big Cats fans. We're trying very hard to contain ourselves right now.
I could talk about Cats all day.
We literally went to DC a few weeks ago just to see the Cats tour. Yeah.
So love it.
It endures now and forever. Well, speaking of Cats, I'm very curious to hear, because that is another very dance driven show, how your experience as a member of that company relates to your experience as a member of the company of Dancin.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Because Cats is a dance company. Everyone dances. Even Old Deuteronomy is out there with the arms, one and a two. Cats was my because doing musical theater, you're not in jazz shoes. You're not doing ballet in fourth position, at least the shows I had done. So Cats was my stepping back in into the more concert dance world, which was nice. And how it's similar to Fosse. I mean, Andy Blankenbuehler is a Fosse dancer, and so much of that show, the rhythm, how the ensemble works together is how Bob constructed his shows. You look at Hamilton and how heavy-handed the ensemble's role is in the piece. What's the word? It's rules of the world. The framework of the play is similar to a Cats, Hamilton, a Fosse show. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, one of the things that is just a reoccurring theme when we talk about Fosse and what made it so distinctive is how he did cast individual people, right? And it's that personality. And with a show like Cats, you're all individual characters. You all have names, you all have stories. I mean, there's a whole fan culture around it. You can go real deep. But so I could see how, you're not just a cat, right? You're Mungo Jerry.
Yeah,
right?
You have a specific point of view. Yeah. Exactly. Ooh, yeah. That's a really good point. It's Cats really taught me the importance of the individual is a piece of this really big puzzle. And you take a piece of that out and the puzzle's suddenly not as interesting and you all rely on each other. In the rehearsal process for Cats, I'm sure you've heard you get 3 words to go with your character. And that has been from the beginning and each actor can interpret it as you will. So there's this exercise where we would get in a circle and they would put like five cats out there and you had to play one of your words and then play two of your words. And me and Rumpelteazer were out there with the two twins who move together, and us interacting with each other, you instantly saw like, oh, we are very different people. And it sounds so simple, but it's like playing this very easy ensemble theater game that just like builds this huge thing that all serves each other. So yeah, Cats was also like a masterclass in ensemble work, which is what we're doing at Dansin'.
It's the acting of it, right?
Like Wayne just gave us a note after we ran Sing, Sing, Sing that all of us really need to have a specific point of view, because people have seen Sing, Sing, Sing so many times as we're doing the choreography, we're facing the front and we're gonna show you these steps, which is beautiful. Like the precision dance of it all is something that we have seen. So what are we doing that's new here? And Wayne really wants us to have an individual perspective. We're in a swing club, we're dancing with each other. Am I a wallflower? Am I shy? Have I been here every night for the last week? We're still finding that at the show.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine it's a really hard thing to do, and to not only to like commit to, right? To like make sure it's present, because there is so much going on. You just, you started this interview by referencing costume changes, right?
Yeah.
You know, like you've got to get from here to there. You've got to hit these steps, but then also you have to bring the story. It's very complex.
Yeah. The story is my favorite part.
Yeah.
Like that's what I feel like I can hold on to, even if my pants are falling off of me. It's like, where am I? What do I want? Who do I need?
What does Bob Fosse mean to you?
He gave permission for dancers to live on a spectrum. I think no matter what your gender identity or expression is, you're moving your body. And Bob Fosse, I think, I don't want to say forced, he just very simply allowed the theater world to understand that dancers are some of the most complex intellectual athletes, you know? And so I don't know, I'm grateful for what he did, because it showed me that like there's a place for me to move my body in this art form that I love more than anything, which is musical theater. Yeah, watching clips of his work growing up, it's like I understand that. It's like watching Cats, it's like I understand how they move. What doesn't work for my queer brain is watching like a more classic piece like Hello Dolly, and you have like the line of masculine men dancing in uniform in the suits. Like, do I have the skill set to do that? Yes, but it just like doesn't get my heart rate up, and it's, there's so much of myself that I'm denying if I were to do work like that. So which is valid and beautiful. It's just not for me in the way that Bob's work is.
We're all here because we feel the same way about Bob and Gwen, for that matter, and all of them. Anybody who's ever danced his choreography, I think we're really drawn to. And so to hear that you felt it from day one of watching his choreography, I think is what brings all of the people that come into that world together.
For me, like watching, like right now I'm Dilys Crowman's trumpet solo from the PBS film of Fosse, which Dilys is in our company. Seeing it in front of me now, watching that video of her back then, the stomach contractions, like the shoulder roll, it's beyond like I was told to do this, or like this is the step, this looks cool and looks interesting. It's more so like there's a chill going up my spine and I'm feeling that. Like every human understands what it feels like to get like that punch in the gut feeling, or falling in love, or feeling nervous or scared, or like going up the roller coaster ride. It's just, people understand it even if they're not consciously aware of it, which I think that's why his work, while it looks sexy, cool, and interesting, because it's all intention driven, it's about the human experience. And that's what people, I think, respond to, outside of being impressed by the athleticism.
Yeah. No, it's funny. When we had Nicole on, she talked about how she thinks of the show as a magic carpet ride through the human condition.
Ooh, work, yeah. Nicole.
Right?
I love that woman.
Right? I mean, oh my gosh.
When I slipped in the studio, my arm fell. Nicole was visiting that, my arm started to swell. Nicole was visiting that week and just went into mom mode and brought me ice packs and packing tape. She like couldn't find an ace wrap.
Yeah.
So just brought in like this like plastic packing tape. And I think a physical therapist is like, we have stuff. And I was looking at him like, no, it's fine. Like Nicole Fossey is taping up my arm. I don't care what this is. It could be scotch tape. Yeah. Like, I'm fine.
We're going to let this happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Love.
Well, you have the great privilege of somewhat opening the show in that first number, Crunchy Granola Sweet. But before you dance, you sing.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could talk us through a little bit about what's going through your mind in that moment and what that song sort of represents and means for the show.
Well, it's like taking the match and you set the match. It's that moment that it strikes, you know, and the flame happens. And I think the downbeat of that guitar, because the prologue happens and then the downbeat of Crunchy Granola, immediately the audience is like, okay, this is the world of Fosse we're getting tonight with all this rock and roll, because the song's never been heard like that. Yeah, I think it's even happening down the street at Neil Diamond.
It is.
Like the song is also there. I mean, what does it mean for me? My heart's pounding because... And I'm feeling anxious because I'm watching all my friends hit the deck and I'm like late to the party with the microphone in my hand. I'm like, what am I doing here? Oh yeah, I'm singing the damn song.
Right.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's fun. I feel like almost like the MC or the hostess that like comes out and it's like, is everybody good? You know, just like give the love to the audience because it's a pop song. I'm not literally... asking, you know, I knew a man who was out of touch. Like, we're just having fun up there, having a rock and roll moment.
Well, you're setting the tone for the show too. Yeah. I mean, you're setting a tone for the show.
Yes.
There are many tones, but that's the first moment the audience gets to really be
this
drawn
is where
in.
We are.
As Nicole says, it's an invitation, right, to the audience to join and come along.
And also hanging out on that ladder, I asked Wayne, I'm like, what do you want me to do? He was like, I hired you to do you. You know, like live your damn life on that ladder. And what we were talking about, how like everyone's a dancer and we all move and have those vibrations. I'm hanging off a ladder with one arm and a microphone in my hand. So I'm very limited of what I can do. Mm. However, while the dolls are on the deck doing the fan kicks and the leaps and doing all this crazy stuff, I just want to still dance on that ladder, and the people who can't do fan kicks, hopefully they can connect with that. And they're like, oh, I get that. I can feel the pulse and the rhythm and I can groove in my seat. And believe it or not, like that is dancing.
Well, let's talk about a moment where you actually get to dance on the deck. You get to actually step into the shoes of Wayne Cilento and Bruce Anthony Davis in Beat Me Daddy 8 to the Bar. So talk to us a little bit about that experience and what is it like? Is it intimidating? Is it exciting? What's going on?
It's all of those things. And I love it and I'm addicted to it. I don't know how many people have the opportunity to, when you do a revived work, have the person who created it and did it literally in your face coaching you. Like Wayne, that music plays and his something happens to him that's so, it feels spiritual to me, just like with the music, it like lives in his body. And he's our director. However, when we're doing that number, he almost becomes a coach. Like my dad coached sports for a while and it looks just like that. Like he is running back and forth. He's saying things like, breathe, easy, you got it. Look at her, shoulder down, down, hit it, ha. Just like talking us through it. And it's to hear what his inner dialogue was when he did the number. It's intimidating. However, I've done work on my end to accept that I am here for a reason and I can bear the responsibility. Yeah, it's a thrill and it's exciting.
Does it feel like Wayne is passing the torch?
It does, especially after my health scare. Him and I had a teary moment in the theater where I was like, I just knew in the hospital with they're explaining the risks to me. And I just knew in my heart, like, I have more dances to dance and I have more songs to sing and I have to get out of here. And Wayne just simply put his hand on my head, like as if I was his like son or something. And he said, "You're a brilliant dancer. You're a really good dancer." And that seems so simple, but I don't know. And we're in the business of like giving notes and critique and feedback. We don't take the time to have compliments, but just Wayne telling me that I'm a good dancer. I know it sounds silly, but it was just this moment of like exhale for the two of us. Cause I don't know if we've like really had that moment. Him and I have been on a journey together for sure. but I think on the other side of the hospital, we just like sat with each other. I cried. He wiped my tears, you know. I hope I'm doing him proud and I hope that he likes what I'm doing up there, because throughout the show, all of my material is stuff that he did. And he sometimes he gets really passionate. And at first that was hard for me to understand like where that passion was coming from. I think being insecure, I thought he was like upset with me, but it wasn't that at all. He just very passionately wanted me to understand, you know, the thought, the feeling, the intention, the dynamic thing, you know? So yeah, he's an intense guy.
Well, and he's having a very specific experience mm-hmm. as the person who created it and was part of the original production.
Yes.
And now as the person who is recreating it and passing it off to this company. Mm-hmm. So he's got to have his own very of complicated course. Set of, and then he has a job to do. In addition to all of that, right? He's got to get the show up
of
and then
course.
You have a job to do. So
yeah,
it sounds like there's a lot of emotions happening, but it also sounds like they're all really positive.
Oh yeah. And the thing is like, if something isn't feels intense, if it's passionate to the point of like, I'm going to cry, that is beautiful to me. You know what I mean? Like I didn't sign up to do the Disney Channel. You know, we're doing a Fosse show. And if Wayne is like saying like, turn me on, let's go, come on. It's like, fuck yeah. You know, like we're living on the edge, you know?
You know, you mentioned earlier, I don't know if this was off tape or not, but how much you admire and love the dancers from the era of the show's creation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we can name a dozen of them off the top of our heads because they were stars in their own right, you know?
Yeah.
But something that has always struck me about their performances, about people that I'm drawn to, is that living on the edge, that danger. Danger is maybe not the right word because it's, you know, they're doing it safely.
Yes.
But it feels dangerous almost,
yes.
right? Like you almost never know what's going to happen next or what they're going to do, right? And what I love about this show, and I think you would agree, is that spirit lives on in this piece.
Yeah, it's the illusion of danger. It was maybe like 6 years ago and a friend of mine was doing a Broadway show and was kind of getting like bullied for like having too much energy and passion. And an older like chorus boy said like, oh, if you're sweating, you're working too hard. Mm. And I have heard that before. And I just like can't comprehend that. Again, that's some people's ministry. It's not mine. Mm. But like you can stand still and cross a stage and like have sweat come down, you know, like however you're channeling your energy. So I don't know. I'm proud to be a part of a company where we fucking love to sweat. And if we're not sweating, it's like, are you okay? What's injured? What's going on? Right. You know, we turned like mom mode.
That's
where are you? Have you eaten?
Do you have a favorite moment in the show?
Doing Sing, Sing, Sing with everybody. We had the full orchestra yesterday and you could tell those musicians love playing that fucking song. Like, the brass section for Sing, Sing, Sing. And like turning directions and seeing Di Lease. Like I wrote a paper and at my performing arts high school about her trumpet solo performance. And I've told her this and she very humbly accepted. Looking around or seeing like Corey, you know, Di Lease turning up stage and Maddie Love is to my left. And we met when we were 17 at New York City Dance Alliance. It's just everything. I'm emotional right now, but it's just this, it feels like everything is right in the universe. And it's like all the hardship, all the blood clot drama is like worth it just to like step kick to that drum. you know, I love it.
Well, speaking of all being right in the world, on the day that you all moved into the Music Box, I believe on your dressing room doors was a photo of each cast member as a kid, right? And you posted yours on Instagram and said, "We did it, little dude." If you could talk to that little dude today.
Oh, shit.
What would you say?
I'd say, keep making choices, keep being risky, and trust that thing, that like thing that takes over your body when you step on stage. Trust that. Some people, a lot of people are not going to understand that and tell you that you're wrong or too feminine, or they're going to try and tell you who you are. You know exactly who you are. Keep writing your own story. And I'm trying to be emotional, but I would tell him, like, keep writing your own story and, like, fuck what people say you should be doing. And if it's scary, you're doing the right thing. Yeah.
Good advice.
Thank you. That was, I think this is a perfect place to leave it. Yeah. That was really, really sweet. Great advice for anybody listening, whether you're a dancer or not.
Mm-hmm.
So Tony, thank you so much for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me, y'all. I'm such a fan of your podcast.
Oh, thank you.
This made me so happy when it popped up in my inbox. Thank you for having me.
A dancing man, a dancing man, a dancing man with footsteps on the sands.
Bob Fosse's Dancin' is now on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. For tickets and more information, visit dancinbway.com. Dancin' Man, a Fabulous Invalid podcast, is a production of O&M Etc. and the Fabulous Invalid LLC, and a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. Special thanks to Civilian for hosting us, and to our audio engineer, Kyle Moore. If you liked this episode, we've got over 100 episodes of the Fabulous Invalid podcast that you can check out, including a two-parter on the life, work, and legacy of Bob Fosse and Gwen Verdon. You can find us online at thefabulousinvalid.com and on social media at fabulousinvalid and on iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.